We are now on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis. My Ikal Meimar, how are we going to take this brisa literally that the most were Nikbu as to which one would be a Karban Ola and which a Karban Chatas, even though it's not the Shas HaFrosha and not the Shas HaSia? In other words, if we accept the integrity of the brisa, because we're going now according to that Tanu who holds that an usher who brings a carbon ani two offals is yatzli dechovaso. We now go back to the brisa. We have a cash on Rav Chisda from this brisa. How could it be that after he purchased the two offals, at some later point in time, he became an usher and he allotted one set of coins for a carbon ola, the other for a carbon chatas, and the halacha validates that allotment, when it's not b'shas l'kicha, not b'shas asiya? And the Gemara says, lo tema, don't interpret this b'raisa v'yachar kach omar, meaning that he was korei shem after the hafrasha. So hafrasha, we said, is like b'shas l'kicha, and afterwards he was korei shem. This is for ola, this is for chatas. No. But rather, add one word in interpreting this brisa. We're not going to completely throw out the gears of the brisa. We're going to add the word lakach. And it means that after the moment he became an usher, when his alter Zayda passed away and he inherited a bomb of money, then he went out and he purchased two birds, two torim or bnei yonah, with those mos that he was mafrish for his kina when he was an ani. So again, at stage number one, he was an ani. He walked into the Migdash Bitumah, Bishogeg. He then designated money. And then he became an ashir. After he became an ashir, lakach v'yomar, he purchased torim with those mos that he had been mafresh. And at the moment, simultaneous with his kinyan, and by rewriting, or I shouldn't say rewriting, but reinterpreting the text of the brisa of Yakach Locha V'Yomar, as we indicated before, at the moment that he purchased the two birds, he was korei shem. And he said that this bird is for chatos and this is ola. Therefore, it's not a contradiction to Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda says that b'shas l'kicha, in fact, there is a valid kviya shem. And you can be korei shem to be koveh the karbon at the moment of kniya, at the moment of purchase. And that's exactly what went on over here. When he purchased the, when he purchased these two birds, at that point, that's exactly the moment in which he made this determination. And he said that this one is for a chatos and this one is for an ola. And basically, instead of rewriting the brisa, it's not necessarily to go that far. We're just going to interpret the brisa by adding one word to the meaning of the brisa, and that is the word v'yakach lakach v'yomar. By adding the word lakach, we can still maintain the integrity of the brisa, and at the same time, we can reconcile this brisa with Rav Chisda. And that's what the Gemara, is doing now. Okay, then. So now, we're up to the Gemara's Kasha, Lakach. We're on Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis, and we are, let's see how many lines from the top. Let's count it down. 1, 2, 3... Three lines down from the top. And now, the Gemara is going to object to this interpretation of the Braisa, which was offered now to defend Rav Chisda. And the Gemara says, wait a minute, Lokach? How are you going to reconcile Lokach with the language of the Braisa? The Braisa says, Mosif Umevi Chovaso. That when he becomes an Ashir, he can now simply take the monies that he allotted for a chatos and add the increment to make up what he needs to purchase a chatos behema. What are you talking about here? There are no damim here in your case. You're telling me lokach, he purchased two birds. So how do you understand mosif umevi chovaso? You know, if he had designated monies, then he can make up the difference and add to those funds. But now you're telling me that he didn't designate money, he actually purchased two birds. At this point, the Gemara offers a possible suggestion, which it immediately rejects. The Gemara says, Diparikle, are you going to raise the possibility that he redeemed the oaf? Let's say he designated an oaf let's call it an ola in this case. Or, no, I think we'll leave that ola. Let's talk about chatos. Let's say he designates an oaf which he purchased as a carbon chatos. And now, after he designates it, he became an ashir, and now he wants to redeem that oaf, which is a chatos, and the monies let's say again, we reinterpreted the Braisa here on the top of Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis as referring to a case where he purchased two birds, one as a chatos and one as an ola. So b'shas l'kicha, he designated one as an ola, one as a chatos, which is fine. Because according to Rav Chisda, ein achinami, you could designate one and the other at the time of l'kicha. But how does the Braisa then say that he could add to the monies of the chatos after he becomes an ashir to make up the difference and now purchase a behema l'chatos? He doesn't have any monies. And the Gemara suggests that when it says v'achakach omar, it means v'achakach lokach v'omar. And when it says lokach mosif umevi chovaso, then what it's referring to is the parikle. And the parikle means that he's poda the oaf that was designated as a chatos, and then the oaf goes lechulin, and after the oaf goes lechulin, he's got money, and he can use that money to buy a chatos behema. Gemara says that's impossible. Unacceptable. For ha ein pijon li oaf. There's no such thing as pijon for an oaf. When an oaf is designated as a carbon, it doesn't lend itself to pigeon. And that applies even if there's a mum in an oaf. Again, a mum in an oaf is a little bit complicated. A mum in an oaf is usually what's called chaser aver. There's a limb of the oaf that's missing. And a general mum, if there's a blemish on the oaf, did not passel the oaf from a carbon. That's all in the Gemara Masechet Menachos. But the Mishnah says in Menachos on Daf Kufi Amid Beis, Ein Podin Mikdusha Saguf Lechulin El Behema. in a case of a balas mum. Aval oaf eino nifter. And that's exeris akosuv. Shalo nemar pijon elebe behema. There is no pijon in an oaf. So the Gemara now has to find another answer to explain this price. So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Papa, kigon shalokach, preda achas. He took half of his money and he purchased one bird, either for an ola or a chatos. And at the moment that he purchased that bird, the money that he's not designating for that karbon is automatically considered designated for the other karbon. For example, e ola zavan, if he purchases one of these two oafs, one of the ofos, as an ola, so the rest of the money that he has is automatically nikva, it's automatically considered a chatos. Umosif umevi l'chovaso mitmei chatoso. Now he can add to buy a kizba and he has enough money to be mekayim the mitzvah, the chova of dmei chatoso. V'hai, if alternatively he purchases with the money li'ola, asla linit, I'm sorry, and if the money was designated to buy a chatos, then the other money, which automatically, as we said, becomes designated as an ola, is asla linedava. It goes as a carbon nedava, because right now he's an usher, and an usher is not chayv in an ola. Now let's go through the opposite case, the flip side. E chatazavin, let's say he purchased an oaf, I mean one of the two ofos for a chatos, then the rest of the funds that he had designated for these two ofos is nikba li'ola. And therefore, eino mosif hu mevi chovasum idvei olasa. He can't use the dvei ola in order to chip in, to participate in the monies that he needs to buy a kizba as a chatos. But rather, he has to bring with these damim olas nidava. So the Gemara says, v'hai, and the oaf that he purchased as a chatos, asla lemisa, in other words, he's going to bring a behema l'chatos because he's an ashir, and the original chatos, that he, the oaf that he designates as a chatos, that is what's called chatos shemesu balea, and its din is lemisa. We cannot be makriv this oaf as a nedava because chatos is not bob in nedava. In any event, the bottom line is that Rav Papa is telling us that since he was lokeach preda achas and he designated as a chatos, then there's a possibility of using the rest of the damim, the balance of the damim. Again, in this case, we can't use it for an ola, but ilachatazavin, if he purchased a carbon oaf as a chatos, then although the rest of the funds, the balance cannot be used as an ola, but the monies that he used to designate for an oaf can be redirected. So let me just read to you a very important note over here. And that is the following. He says, Amar Rav Papa, just 1 second. Kigon shalokach preda achas. The Braisa refers to a case where he used part of his money. He purchased one bird. Automatically, the remaining money has a designation for that bird which he didn't purchase. E'olazovin. The Braisa means that if he purchased one bird as an ola, it means now that the remaining money is automatically designated with the kedusha of a chatas, is then mosif umevi chovaso midmei chatasa. He can use that money, the balance of the money that he had designated for the ola, meaning the other monies, and he can add to that whatever he has to add in order to purchase a karbon chatas. Gufa, Amrab Loz, Amrab Oshaya, Metame Migdash Oshir Vehevi, Karbon Ola, Karbon Oni, Lo Yotza, Rab Chaga, Amrab Yoshaya, Yotza. So we have a machlokas. What is the status of a karbon that was brought by an Oshir when he brings a karbon Oni? Mesve, we're going to challenge now the position of Rav Chaga from a Mishnah in Masechet Nagoyim. When a Mitzora becomes Tahar, he's got to bring a whole bunch of Karbonos. And there is a variable Karbon in the context of Mitzora, meaning if he's not wealthy and he cannot bring two Tloim, one for a Chatas, one for an Ola, if he's an Ani, he could bring two birds, one for a chatas and one for an ola. Now what happens in a case of a Mitzora who brought a carbon ola v'yored, and that was not allowed given his financial status? Mitzora Ani, Shehevi, carbon asher, goes in both directions. First, he was an Ani and he brought a carbon asher. I would have said Yashikoyach, you know, kol kavod, he brings a carbon asher. Asher Shehevi Karbon Ani. Oh, so in the first case, Yatza. Right, we're clapping and we appreciate it. In the second case, however, Asher Shehevi Karbon Ani, Lo Yatza. Now this would contradict Rav Chaga, because according to Rav Chaga, if an Asher brings a Karbon Ani, Yatza. And the more answers, Shiny Hasam. There, in the case of Mitzora, it's different. Why Dechziv Zos? The Torah says in Vayikra Yud Dalet that Zos Torah Samitzora. This is the law of Mitzora. And Zos is a miut. And that teaches you that only the Mitzora, if he was an usher and he brought his carbon olav, he already brought a carbon ani, his yotze, but not in any other scenario. Ihachi Reisha Nami, if you're telling me that Vizos sets up a unique halacha in Mitzora that he cannot change the karmon, is then even in the first case where a Mitzora Ani brought a karmon Ashir, it should not be valid and he has not fulfilled his obligation? And the Gemara answers that in addition to the Vizos, which is a miut, we also have a ribui, HaRabi Rachmana Toras. The Torah says, Zos Toras HaMitzora. And that is a ribui. What is this ribui coming to tell us? That if he's a poor person, but he brought the carbon of a wealthy person, an Ashir, he can fulfill his obligation. And the Gemara now proves this from a Braisa. Visanya, we learned in a Braisa, Toras, Lerabos. The word Toras in the Parsha of Mitzora is coming as a ribui, that Mitzora Onisha Hevi Karban Ashir Yatza. Yachal, I might consider going a step further, afilu asher shevi karbon ani, maybe that's also included in this ribui of Toras. Talmud lomar zos, that we use the pasuk zos as a miut to tell me that the law of a mitzora, if he switched it around, only applies to a poor mitzora who could fulfill his obligation with a karbon asher, but not the other way around. So the Gemara asks, "Menelif mine." Once the Torah has given us, in the case of Mitzora, room for allowing an usher to fulfill his obligation with a karbon ani, And we have derived this. I'm sorry, just one second. We're Rav Chaga. Yeah, I'm sorry, just the opposite. Now that we've derived from Zos, that in the case of Mitzora, if he was an Oshir, and he brought his carbon ani, he's not Yotze, why don't we now universalize that through what's called a Binyan Av and apply it to all cases where an Oshir brought a carbon ani, and he's not Yotze? Why does Rav Chaga say that in a case of an Oshir who brings a carbon ani Yotza? And the Gemara says, Miyad Rachmana, there's another mute in the Parsha Mitzor. It says, Viyim Dalhu, meaning he's poor, and we're telling you that only in the case of Dal, there he cannot bring, he can bring, a carbon olaviyoreh, a carbon of ofos, but not if he's an Oshir. And from the fact that there was a special mute of the Imdal Hu telling you that this restriction, that a poor person must be a poor person in order to bring the carbon of a poor person, that only applies to the case of Mitzora. But in all other cases, where there's a carbon ol viore, then even if he is an usher and he brings a carbon ani, it's valid. And this leads us to the Mishnah. We're now up to the Mishnah Daf Mem Aleph Amid Beis, and we're talking about the Avodas Yom HaKippurim of the Kohen Gadol. Kosher Lashon Shel Zahoris Berosh Soya Mishtaleach. He ties a crimson string of wool and he attaches it to the head of the Soya Mishtaleach, and later on that, hopefully that crimson wool will turn to white. Hamido Keneged Beis Shilucho. Now what this means is that initially the Soya Mishtaleach is located in the west, and that's where the Vidui took place. Now he positions the Soyer towards the east, towards Beis Shilucho, which means the Shar Nikanor, the entrance into the Azara on the east, because he's sending it eastward towards the Midbar. Vela Nishchat Kineged Beis Shchitaso. And as far as the carbon of the Soyer Hapnimi, which is the Soyer Lashem, we need to set up Kineged Beis Shchitaso. This is a very ambiguous phrase. The Gemara is going to try to interpret it. Then, Bolo Eitzel Paro Shnia, he goes back to the par for a second vidui, V'somech Shtei Yodov Olav Misvada, and now the Mishnah records the nusach of his vidui, V'kach Haya Omer. Now, what we're about to learn is the sheet of Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim disagree. On Hashem, please God, Chatasi, I'm sorry. Avisi pashati chatosi lefanecha niu besi ubnei Aaron am kodshecha am kedoshecha on Hashem kaperno lavonos ulepshoim ulechatoim shavisi v'shepashati v'shechatosi lefanecha niu besi ubnei Aaron am kedoshecha. This is Rabbi Meir, because we're going to derive the Nusach of Vidui from Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu in his Vidui starts with Avon, goes up to Pasha, which is more severe, and then goes down to Chatos, which is a Shogeg, which is the less severe. That's not how we pass. We pass like the Chachamim, and we say Chatosi or Visi Pashati, in which case the Vidui goes from the less strict up to the more strict. Kakosavitoris Moshe Avdecha. And now the Kohen Gadol, in the context of his vidui, he quotes the pasuk in Chumash, and when he says the word Hashem, he pronounces it the way it's written, and Heinonim Achrav, and therefore the people who are present and they hear the name of Hashem, the Yud Kei Vav Kei pronounced as it's written, They respond, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso Li'olam Li'olam Vod. The Gemara now takes us back to that ambiguous phrase towards the beginning of the Mishnah of Lanishchat Keneged Beis Shchitaso. Iboyeluhu, the Gemara asks, what does that mean? Lanishchat Akshirakoi, meaning that just like we tie a crimson strip around the Sora Mishleach, we do so even on the Sora Pnimi. O Amodakoi. It's not referring to the red strip, but rather it's referring to the position of the Sawyer. Toshma, the Tani Rav Yosef, we learned from Rav Yosef a brisa that says, Koshar Loshon Shel Zahoris Barosh Soya Mishtaleach, Vemido Keneged Beis Shilucho, Velanishchat Keneged Beis Shchitaso. And the brisa goes ahead and tells us that why is it that there are two crimson strips, one for the Sora HaMishtalech and one for the Sora HaPnimi, and why is one on the head of the goat and the other is around its neck? And the brisa adds, Shelo Yisarev Zeba, Zeba Lo Yisarev Ba'acherim, that we shouldn't make a mistake which Sora is which is Pnimi and which is the Lazazel. And we shouldn't confuse one Sayer of the two, whichever one, with other Seirim. So the Gemara says, Yamrit Bishlem Akshira Koi Shapir, if the Bryce is assuming that the Nishchat, meaning the Sora Pnimi, also requires a Kshira, except that in this case, instead of tying it around its head, it's around its neck, is then Shapir. I understand very well what the Brisa means by saying Shelo Yisarev Zebozeh. I mean, obviously we'll be able to distinguish one Sawyer from the other because the strips are on two different parts of the animal. But if you're talking about organizing it or positioning it opposite that place where it'll be sent away, meaning let's face it towards the east where it'll go out. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says that it's Kadesh Lo Yisarev Ze Im Ze? I mean, how are you going to accomplish that goal simply by pointing it towards the east in the exact same direction as the Sora Mishtaleach? And therefore, this brisa would only make sense if we assume Akshirakoi, but Eli Yamrda Modakoi is Nehi de Bechavre Lomi Avre. The high cutter, babe, high low cutter. Okay, you may be able to distinguish between one Sawyer and the other, even though they're both facing the east, because one has a strip and the other does not. Bachrini mias mi'arev. But now you have the Sawyer Pnimi, which doesn't have a strip of wool, and you're facing it towards the east, which is exactly what you would do with any carbon. So how is this going to accomplish a goal? Shelo yisarev bachirim. Elav shmamino akshira koi. We have to assume, Shmamino, that what we're requiring here in our Mishnah is Kshira, that we tie a crimson strip of wool, but in this case around the neck of the Sora Pnimi. On Rav Yitzchok Shtele Shona Shamati, I heard two things regarding these strips of red wool, and I don't know exactly what I heard. Achas shel para v'achas shel sora mishtaleach, and achas tzricha shir v'achas eino tzricha shir v'lo yadana hei minayu. I heard that one of the two strips, one is used during the burning of the paraduma, the other is around the head of the sora mishtaleach. One requires a shir, a minimum amount, and one does not. And exactly what the minimum amount is, the Gemara doesn't say specifically, but there is some sort of minimum amount. The Gemara later on is going to get into the specifics. But anyway, Lo Yadana says, Rav Yitzchak, I don't know, Hei Minaya, which one requires a minimum, which one does not. Amar Rav Yosef, Nechse Anon, let's analyze this. Shel Soyer HaMishtaleach, Deboi Chaluka, Boi Shir. In the case of the strip of wool that's tied around the head of the Sora Mishtaleach, we can understand why we need a certain minimum amount of a strip, because we have to divide it into two parts, half of which will turn white and half of which will remain crimson. And the part that is... just 1 second. Which section is which? The Mishnah we didn't get up to yet, but the Mishnah says that that after, you know, when they got to the precipice and they're about to do the shiluach, they divide the red strip, and half is tied to a rock. Oh, the half that's tied to the rock is going to turn white, and there's another half that is around the horns of the sawyer. I mean, that's not going to change its color. There's no such din of parallel locha of splitting the crimson strip around the para is lo boy shear. It makes sense that doesn't require any minimum amount. Maskif la Rami bar Chama. Rami raises an objection to this proof of Rav Yosef. De paranami boy kovid. With regard to the paraduma, it makes sense to require a minimum amount because it must have weight. The Torah says, El toch sreifas ha-para. It's got to go into the depth of the flame. The red wool must be heavy enough to plummet the depths of the flame. If it doesn't have that requisite weight, then the wool will be consumed by the fire even before it plummets down to the depth of the flame. And now Rav is going to defend Rav Yosef's argument, his proof. Amale Rava, Koved Tanoihi. Whether or not the strip of red wool in the case of Paradum requires Koved is a matter of Machlok Shin Tanoim. And that's why we could certainly say that Rav Yosef is following that opinion, that shita, that does not require COVID. So the Gemara now again objects to Rav Yosef's proof, because Rav Yosef is based on the premise that the red strip of the Sarya Mishtaleach has to be divided. Udepara lo boy chaluka, but you're assuming that the strip in the case of the para does not require division. Esfei Abaye, Ketzer Ose. We have a Mishnah in Masechta Par in the third chapter. What does he do? Ketzer Ose. In other words, the Kohen is performing the Sreifas HaPara, and he's got cedar wood, he's got hyssop, he's got the red wool that adds all this. Is Karchan Bishiyari Lashon. He should take the cedar wood and the hyssop and wrap them in the leftovers of the strip of red wool and then cast them into the fire. So in other words, Abai says that from this Mishnah we see that there are leftovers of this strip. It must be that it was cut in two. And the Gemara answers, Ema Biznav Lashon. That we should read the Mishnah as if it says he should wrap it with the tail end of the strip. In other words, before being used, the woolen strip was combed out, and it causes one end to taper off and assume an appearance that looks like a tail. So the Mishnah means that the cedarwood and the hyssop were wrapped up with the tapered part of the wooden strip, not the piece of wool that was cut off and used to wrap these items. Let's go on in the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanin, Amar Rav. Eitz Erez Ushni Solas, the cedarwood and the red wool. And we're talking about the Paraduma now. Shekoltosan Shalheves Kshera. If they were, so to speak, engulfed by the fires and consumed even before they got into the fire, it is valid. they're considered to be have been cast into the midst of the burning cow. Meisvei nishavhev haloshon mevi loshon acher mekadesh. The Brisa says that if the red strip of wool was burnt in midair, was singed in midair, then he has to bring another string, another strip, replace the first one, and sanctify it. And it seems from this brisa that if it was consumed in midair, it didn't fall into the midst of the burning of the cow. It's got to fall into the midst, cast into the midst. And another red woolen strip now has to be cast into the midst of the burning of the cow. And the brisa is completely focused on this woolen strip. It could apply theoretically to the cedar wood and the hyssop as well. But because the wooden strip is the most combustible of the three ingredients, Tosi Shon points out, that's why he focuses on the lashon, on the strip. Omar Abai says Lokasha kan bikolachas kan benichfefes. The Bryce's case, we're talking about a rising flame, whereas Chanin's ruling, Rav Chanin, he was talking about a reference to a case of a crouching flame. And in the Bryce, the woolen strip was consumed by a rising pillar of flame high above the burning cow. And the strip was therefore never cast into the midst of the burning cow. Rav Chanin, on the other hand, is referring to a case where the flames remain close to the actual burning mass, and therefore the woolen strip was burned in sufficiently close proximity to the burning of the cow to be considered in its midst. Rava offers an alternative answer to this question. He says, Kovid Tanoihi, that whether the items that are thrown into the burning remains of the Paraduma must have weight is a matter of Machlokas Tanoim Desanya, we learned in the Braisa. Lama Karchan, why does he wrap the cedarwood and the hyssop in this lashon of the red woolen strip, Kideshiu Kulam Baguda Achas, according to Rebbe, because they should all be in one bundle. In other words, all three items should be taken simultaneously, because the Pasuk says at the beginning of Parashas Chukas, Vilokacha Kohen Eitz Erez V'Eitz V'Zov V'Shnis Olas V'Shlich El Toch Sreifas Apar V'Lokach means one lakicha of all three items. And that's Rebbe's opinion, Kideshi Ukula Baguda Achas. Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Shimon Omer, he says, Kideshi Ubahen Kovid, V'yiplu L'toch Sreifa Sapara. So he wraps them around to give them weight so it'll fall into the burning of the cow, the remains of the cow. So Rabbi Lazar is maintaining that the items cast into the burning remains of the cow require weight. And the cumulative weight of the three items would be sufficient to ensure that the bundle plummets intact into the burning remains of the cow. The woolen strip must have sufficient weight on its own so that it not come loose and flutter in the air when it is thrown into the remains of the burning cow. Rebbe only speaks of the requirement that three items be taken together, not of a weight requirement, and therefore he would hold that it's valid even if the items are consumed in midair. So just to summarize, Rav, who ruled that the par is valid even if the red woolen strip was engulfed by the flame in midair, he follows and reflects the view of Rebbe, who does not require that the items cast into the burning remains of the Paraduma have weight, and it's valid even if they're consumed in midair. The Brice, on the other hand, which disqualifies the strip that was singed in midair, reflects the view of Rabbi Lazar, who says that the items must have weight so that they plummet intact into the burning remains. Ki osar avdimi om Rab Yochanan sholosh l'shomos shamati. I heard a distinction between three strips of red wool. Achas shel para, vi achas shel sodir, sorry, I'm still there. The achas shel mitzora, achas mishkal asorazuz, the achas mishkal shnei sloim, the achas mishkal shekel. One has the weight of 10 zuz, one of 2 sloim, and one of a shekel, the ainli lefarish. I don't know how to explain which is which. That wasn't part of the Mesorah. And ki osa Ravin, when Ravin came to Babel from Eretz Yisrael, pirsha mishmeid Rabbi Yonasan. But he was able to explain it in the name of Rabbi Yonasan. And here we turn to Daf Mem Beis. Shel para mishkal asorazuz. The strip of the paraduma, which has to be heavy so it falls into the burning remains, is that weighed 10 zuz. Shel sorya mishtalech mishkal shnei sloim. With regard to the sorlas zazel, that we needed to divide it into two, then it has the weight of 2 sloim. A sela is equal to 4 zuz. The weight of the strip was 8 zuz, rather than 10 zuz, in the case of the parah. The shel mitzora mishkal shekel, the red strip of the mitzora, which was neither weighty nor did it have considerable length, all it needed was the weight of a shekel, which is the equivalent of 2 zuz. So 3 weights here were 10, 8, and 2 zuzim, respectively. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Pligi ba Rav Shimon ben Chalafta v'Rabbanan bipara. With regard to the size of the red woolen strip used for the paraduma, we have machlokas between Rav Shimon ben Chalafta and the Rabbanan. Chanom are going to one opinion, mishkal asora, which is exactly what we saw until now. Chanom are mishkal shekel, that all we need is the weight of one shekel, which as we said was only 2 zuz. And that means, according to this last view, the strip of the paraduma does not require weight. V'simonech echad ha-marbe v'echad ha-mamit. You can remember this by thinking of the famous phrase that both the one who does much or the one who doesn't do little, which of the three weights mentioned above are possibilities here? And we're going to assume that this reflects the Mishnah in Menachos, which states that both a person who offers a large offering, one offers a small offering, as long as the heart is directed towards heaven, in the final equation, God accepts both of them. And this is going to be a mnemonic device for remembering that one of the disputants here assigns to the woolen strip used for the paraduma the largest of the three measures. That's 10 zuz. The other disputant assigns to it the smallest of the three measures, meaning 4 zuzim. Neither assigns it to it the middle measure, which is 8 zuzim. Amale Rabbi Yirmiyahu midifti l'Ravina, lo bipara pligi, elo bisara mishtaleach pligi. The machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan is not about the paraduma, but rather about the sara mishtaleach. And the reason 10 zuzim of a weight would be required, perhaps we want to publicize the miracle of the red wool turning to white. Vahu yoma noch nafshe de Ravya Barkisi. On that very day that they had a machlokas about this in the yeshiva, Rava Barkisi died. The anchuba simna, and they made this mnemonic device out of it to coincide with, in other words, this machlokas should coincide with the death of Ravya Barkisi, and Ravya Barkisi mechaper besar mishtalech. The death of Ravya Barkisi, like the death of tzaddikim, should atone like the Soyer HaMishtalech. And just like we know that the Soyer HaMishtalech will carry upon itself all the sins, all the avonos, to an uninhabited land, and the righteous Rav Yehuda Kisi died on that very day, it serves as a mnemonic for remembering that the woolen strip which was used, which was really the subject of this debate, that day was the woolen strip used on Yom Kippur for the dispatched he-goat. So this is where we're going to stop with Omar Rabbi Yitzchok Shtei Shchitos Shamati here on the top of Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph.